sit and close her eyes and use her imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, we'll enjoy the adventures of Philip Marlowe with the case of Red Wind. But first, on the lighter side, let's pay a visit to George Burns and Gracie Allen. Burns and Allen was a pioneering radio act. Gracie wasn't always as dumb as she seemed on the air. In fact, early in her career with Burns, she played the straight part and George gave out with the funnies. But even a dummy could see that she was getting all the laughs. George Burns, no dummy himself, quickly switched the parts, deciding that Gracie, with her natural sense of humor, should become the comedienne. They opened at the Palace on a bill with Eddie Cantor and Georgie Jessel. Cantor, impressed by Gracie's wit, asked her to appear on his Sunday night NBC program. She created a minor sensation and was booked, this time with her husband, into Rudy Valley's Fleischman Hour. By early 1932, they were signed by CBS to their own program. Their final full season in radio was 1949, making the move to television in October of 1950. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with George Burns and Gracie Allen in The Case of Rabbit Mink Coat, another classic show from the golden age of radio here on Yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Marge, Amos, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you.
Let's meet the people who live in the Burns house, George and Gracie.
As we join the Burnses today, we find them in a downtown department store taking advantage of a February clearance sale.
Oh, these clearance sales are wonderful places to save money, George.
Yeah, I guess so. What do you need?
Oh, just little odds and ends. Do you want to get some things for me while I look at bath towels?
Sure.
All right. Here's a pencil. Make a list.
Okay.
A sink strainer.
Sink strainer.
A paring knife.
Paring knife.
Pot holders.
Pot holders.
Floor wax.
Floor wax.
Mink coat.
Mink coat.
Potato masher.
Wait a minute.
Dish rag.
Wait a minute.
Paper towel.
Hold it, hold it. How did a mink coat get in there?
Oh, you noticed it, huh?
Yeah, I noticed it.
Oh, I thought if I buried it in the middle of the list, you might buy it before you realized it. forget it, huh?
Forget it, yes.
Well, is it all right if I get an old, beat-up, second-hand mink coat?
A second-hand mink coat?
Yeah. I'll be about the 15th to wear it.
Who wore it before?
14 minks.
I wasn't born yesterday. What do you take me for?
A mink coat, I hope.
Well, forget it. Now let's buy those other items on the list. How many potholes do you need?
14.
What kind?
Mink. I'll sew them together.
I said forget the mink coat.
All right, dear.
Now, where shall we go first?
The fur department. I want to make a phone call.
Make it from here.
But up there, I can make it for nothing.
Really?
Well, sure. You get a free call with every mink coat.
Gracie, you're not getting me into the fur department. Now, let's go on the elevator and we'll do our shopping.
Going up. Step back in the car, please.
Where are the kitchen utensils?
Kitchenware's on the fourth floor. Step back in the car, please.
We're packed in here like sardines now.
Yeah, and my back itches. Would you scratch it for me, George?
Sure. There. How does that feel?
Fine, only a little to the left.
Oh, I'm sorry, I got the wrong back. There. How was that?
Fresh.
Again, I missed.
George, my back still itches.
I'll try once more.
Oh, that feels wonderful. Thank you.
You're welcome, lady.
You did it? Then whose back am I scratching?
Mine, and take it easy. Your nails are very sharp.
Start the elevator, will you?
Second floor, ladies' shoes, hats, gloves, and dresses. Going up. Third floor, ladies' fur coats.
Oh, I think I'm going to faint. Quick, George, take me off the elevator.
Faint on the next floor. That's kitchenware.
Oh, I'm passing out.
No, you're not. Just staying right here.
Sir, your wife has fainted.
You mind your own business.
Are you just going to stand there with an unconscious wife?
Why not? I've been doing it for 14 years.
You carry her off this elevator or they'll be carrying you off.
Okay, okay.
Try a piggyback.
Never mind, I got her now. One side, folks.
My goodness, what's happened?
This lady fainted.
Oh, where am I?
You're in the fur department. Shall I throw some water on you?
No, just throw a mink coat on me.
Okay, Gracie, you tricked me into the fur department, but you're still not getting a fur coat.
You're just in time to see our fashion show. The models will parade by here in all our latest fur creations.
We're not interested. We're just leaving.
And then they remove the furs and model dresses.
Sorry, we're in an awful hurry.
And then they remove the dresses and model lingerie.
I guess we can stay a few minutes. Have them hurry with the fur show.
Here comes the first model. This is lovely Siberia Kalinsky.
How do you do, Miss Kalinsky?
Kalinsky is the name of the fur.
Oh.
However, if you're the friendly type, the second model is Gloria Perkins.
Oh, that Perkins fur is lovely.
Perkins is the name of the model.
Oh.
Now, this next one is Broadtail.
That's nice for her.
And here's a perfectly divine number. Note the full sleeves at extreme length. It took 12 beavers to make this coat.
Really? How long did it take them?
The beavers contributed their skin.
Well, it's beautiful. Oh, and it feels so soft.
Gracie, get your hands off the coat.
Oh, I just want to stroke it, George. I won't hurt it, George. I just want to stroke it.
Take it easy,
George.
Lenny. Take it easy. You know, this is awfully pretty. Maybe I was hasty about not getting you a fur coat. How much is this coat, miss?
Only $4,300.
Miss, you know that water you were going to throw on me?
Yes.
Well, you better throw it on my husband. He's fainted.
Now, Gracie, ever since you got me home from the store, you've been after a fur coat. The answer is still no. Now you're turning on the tears, huh? Suppose I'm a brute. Suppose I treat you like a dog.
No, you don't.
Of course not.
A dog has a fur coat.
Oh, stop.
Everyone has a fur coat but me. Cats have fur. Rabbits have fur. Even you have three hairs on your chest.
Gracie, if you
think
don't...
Think of my health. Buy me a fur coat so I won't have to go around shivering in the snow.
It doesn't snow in Los Angeles.
Then buy me a fur coat and a ticket to New York.
I refuse to discuss it any further.
Well, I read in the paper about a woman who caught pneumonia just because she didn't have a fur coat. Caught pneumonia and died. Better have your black suit pressed, George. George, marry again, but not too soon. Remember me a while. And George, take my insurance money and buy yourself a fur coat. I don't want you to go the way I'm going. Forget it.
Now go get lunch ready.
You're all right, dear.
What a woman I married. Oh, well, it's better than doing a skating act. Come in.
Howdy, little man.
Oh, hello, Mr. Johnson. Say, I wish I had some of that Texas oil money of yours. Gracie wants a fur coat.
Why, shucks, down home I got one for my wife and it didn't cost me nothing. I just went out in the woods and shot some rabbits.
And you made her a coat?
Yep, beautiful mink coat.
Mr. Judson, you can't make a mink coat out of rabbit fur.
These was Texas rabbits.
Oh, I forgot, everything is better in Texas.
You bet your life. Why, Texas is better than the other 47 states put together.
I'm surprised you admit that there are other states.
Oh, why, sure. Them 47 states are the USA.
Right.
The United Suburbs of Amarillo.
Mr. Judson, USA means United States of America.
Yankee propaganda.
I guess so.
Now, you do what I done and shoot your wife a fur coat. Of course, it was easy for me because I'm a dead shot. I just drawed the bead and plugged that rabbit four times.
Well, if you're such a good shot, why did you have to plug it four times?
I done it a purpose. I knew I was going to make a coat out of it, so I shot in the buttonholes.
Now, take it easy.
Why, man, where I come from, that's just ordinary shooting. We got fellas in Texas can shoot the yolk out of an egg without touching the white.
Mr. Judson.
That's why they sent all the soldiers down there to be trained. During the war, that state was just full of happy sacks.
Happy sacks? Don't you mean sad sacks?
In Texas?
Oh, they're happy in Texas.
Mr.
Howdy, little lady. Say, I was just telling your husband how I went hunting and got enough animals to make my wife a fur coat.
Why, that's a wonderful idea. George can do that, too. How did you get them, Mr. Judson?
I knocked them over with my Remington.
Oh, hit them on the head with a typewriter, huh?
Hit them on the head with a...
Listen, Gracie, just because Mr. Judson shot a fur coat for his wife doesn't mean I can do it.
Well, why not?
Well, he's good. That guy can shoot a rabbit blindfolded.
Well, so could you if you saw a blindfolded rabbit.
Suppose I shot a couple of rabbits. Would you be satisfied with a rabbit coat?
George, I'd rather have a rabbit coat from you than a mink from Sax.
Really?
Can I have a mink from Sax?
No.
I'd rather have a rabbit from you.
I see. Well, thanks. Come in.
Hello, Gracie. Hello, Joe.
Oh, hiya, Dr.
Miller. Oh, Dr. Miller, I'm so glad you're here. You're a psychiatrist. Now, maybe you can reason with George.
What about?
Well, I could have a fur coat if he'd go out in the woods and get the rabbits, but he doesn't think he can.
Why, of course you can, George. It's the law of nature that man should wear the skins of animals because he's more intelligent.
Yeah, huh?
Certainly. That's why Gracie can wear a rabbit skin coat. If the rabbit was smarter than Gracie, it would wear a Gracie skin coat.
I never thought of it that way. Hey, a hunting trip might be fun. Would you like to come along, Doc?
Oh, I'd love to. I've got a wonderful shotgun, new automatic type. You just insert a magazine.
Oh, isn't it wonderful? You can hunt and read at the same time.
What are you thinking about, Doc?
I'm just wondering how a rabbit would look in a Gracie skin coat.
I see what you mean. Come in.
Hello, all.
Oh, hello, Meredith.
Hiya, Mayor. Would you like to go hunting with Doc Miller and me?
Oh, you bet I would, George. As a boy back in Mason City, Iowa, I used to take the shotgun and head for the woods every Saturday with Sport trotting by my side.
Well, good, good.
I can still hear Papa's tender farewell. Be careful and don't shoot yourself, son. Those shells cost money. Look, Meredith.
George, would you like to hear an exciting thing that happened to Sport and me one day?
No.
Well, sir, we were hiking through the woods. Sport was frisking about, licking my hand, when suddenly he stumbled upon a rattlesnake. With a startled cry, he yelled, "Meredith, save me from the reptile." Well, sir...
Wait a minute.
Your dog said that? Well, Sport isn't a dog. He's my brother.
Well, sir, you said he was licking your hand.
Yeah, I've been eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Well, heard, sir, goodbye, Mary.
George, you don't wish to hear the finish of my story?
No.
Very well. I'll plan on going hunting with you.
Good, and you don't have to worry about shooting yourself. I'll pay for the show.
Thank you. Goodbye, all.
Goodbye, all. What are you thinking about, Doc?
There goes another skin for the rabbits.
Yeah, that puts them two up on us.
Well, perhaps we can even the score on this hunting trip, huh?
Well, why don't you invite Mr. Judson and Bill Goodwin to go along?
Oh, good idea. I'll bet that Judson's a crack shot.
Oh, not as good as George. I remember the time George went hunting with a bird dog, a pointer, and a setter at his heels, and a big sack over his shoulder to carry the game in. He only fired three shots, but when he got home, that sack was full.
What was in it?
Bird dog, a pointer, and a setter.
I can't understand how that happened. I've got eyes like a hawk. Why, I'll bet I could take a gun and... put a bullet right in the middle of that mouse hole.
What mouse hole?
Right there in the corner.
That's the fireplace.
Well, Doc, my car is at the garage being tuned up. While I go after it, you call the other fellas.
Your car's all ready, Mr. Burns. Look at the way I tuned up that motor.
Swell, swell. I'm going on a hunting trip this afternoon, and... Wait a minute. You're the fellow who's been giving me trouble for weeks now. You always had a different job, and you always lose your temper.
Only because I was a poor, frustrated soul, pushed into jobs where I didn't belong by the fickle finger of fate.
I see.
But now that I'm a mechanic, I do things that really help people.
Good.
Why, I ground your valves. I scraped your carbon. If you want me to, I'll adjust your gasket.
No, my gasket is fine.
I'm so happy with this job.
Glad to hear it. Let's have my keys, please.
Being a mechanic has taught me a lot about life, too. Life is a piece of machinery, and we're all parts of it. Some of us are cogwheels, some of us are spark plugs, and some of us are just nuts.
That you are.
I'm so happy with this job.
Please, my keys.
Put this engine in tip-top condition. When you drive off, it'll surge with power.
Good, 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 good. Let's have the keys.
You'll be able to pass everything on the road. You'll go by one. You'll go by another.
Okay. Right by everyone. Give me the keys.
I'm so happy with this job. I can see you now zooming along faster and faster. 50, 60, 70, 80, 90. Wait a minute. Driving that fast is very dangerous.
I won't drive fast. Give me the keys. I'll drive fast.
You might lose control. You'll skid. You'll go off the road.
I'll go 5 miles an hour. The keys, please.
You'll crash into a tree and be thrown out of the car. You'll land on your head and get a concussion.
I'll ride a bicycle. The keys.
You may recover, but for the rest of your life, you'll have blinding headaches. And all because the garage made me tune up this motor.
I'll use skates. My keys.
Well, I want no part of it. I'll quit this lousy job.
Please, let me have the keys.
And give you a concussion? Never. I'll take my monkey wrench and break your
One second. Wait a minute.
Oh. There. I've kept you from having a headache. Bye.
Calm down. Bill says we can take his car on the hunting trip.
Sure, you can take mine, George. I do lots of hunting in my car.
Where do you hunt, Bill?
Up and down Hollywood Boulevard.
Oh, but there's no wildlife on Hollywood Boulevard.
Oh, silly girl.
This is a different kind of hunting we're going to do, Bill. So, for once, get your mind off women.
Well, okay, George. From now on, I'll concentrate on Mother Nature and the trees and the flowers.
Good.
Are you an outdoor lover, Bill?
Oh, yeah. Not bad indoors, either.
Bill, can't you think about something besides women? Think about animals.
All right, George. I'll think about those soft little creatures running around in Griffith Park and... Oops, there I go again.
This guy is murder. Now look, Bill, do you want to go hunting or don't you?
I do, George, I do. But it's hard for me to forget women.
Oh, bother the women.
Oh, don't suggest that. He'll never go hunting.
You're not kidding. Come in.
Come on, Mr. Judson and Meredith and I are ready.
Yeah, I'm hankering to do some shooting.
Me too.
Yeah.
Now let's get going. I want to shoot some rabbits.
You think you can hit one, little man?
Oh, George is a wonderful shot. He can shoot from the shoulder or he can shoot from the hip.
Yeah. I can't wait to get out there and take a couple of pot shots.
Shoots from there, too, huh?
Let's go.
I've almost got my fur coat.
Yeah, George is the only one who hasn't shot anything.
Yeah? Well, watch this. There's a rabbit at the foot of that tree.
Oh, wonderful. Now I've got a hat.
A hat?
You knocked a bird's nest out of the tree.
Let's move on to another spot.
Well, you'll soon have your coat, Gracie. I've got 5 rabbits. How many you got, Doc?
7.
Meredith?
9.
Judson?
12.
George?
Oh, shut up.
Gracie, George is becoming more and more depressed about his poor marksmanship, but I think I've got a plan to restore his self-confidence.
Oh, what is it, Doctor?
Well, you take the rabbits that the rest of us have shot and go around behind that big rock. Now, we'll tell George that there are rabbits on top of it, and every time you hear him shoot, toss one over the rock.
Oh, and he'll think he killed it.
Exactly. I'll tip off the others and we'll get started. Mm.
George, look. There's a rabbit on top of that rock.
Where? I don't see it.
It's there. Shoot.
Okay. Well, I'll be darned. I hit it. It fell right at my feet.
Hey, there's another on the rock, George.
I don't see it.
Go ahead. Shoot.
Okay. Again, I got one.
Yonder's another one, George. Same spot.
Where? I can't see.
Never mind. Just shoot.
3 in a row. Boy, I got eyes like a hawk.
There's another one, George. See right there on top.
Never mind. I can see it. Hey, I'm terrific. Bang, and I've got a rabbit.
Ha ha ha!
Another one? But I didn't even shoot. I just said bang. Well, I'll be hanged. Wait a minute. There's something phony going on here. Bang, bang. I thought so. Who's behind that rock?
Nobody but us rabbits.
Gracie, come out of there. Making a fool of me in front of everybody.
Now, don't blame Gracie, George. We were all in on it to help.
Yeah, we were.
God, I don't need your help. You can all go home and leave me here alone. I'll get my wife a fur coat.
Well, when will you be home, dear?
I'm not leaving these woods till I've shot something.
Well, at least come out in November to vote.
Never mind. Just run along.
All right, dear. And whatever you shoot, I'll wear it. George, I knew you could do it. I'm so proud of you.
Are you really happy with what I shot?
Oh, you bet I am, darling. I'll be the only woman in town with a cowskin coat.
Bill Goodwin speaking. The Burns and Allen Show has been a presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
From sometime in the 1940s, it's been George Burns and Gracie Allen with Rabbit Mink Coat. In a moment, the adventures of Philip Marlowe with Red Wind as this edition of Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
The adventures of Philip Marlowe, the tough private detective created by Raymond Chandler, came to NBC in 1947 as a summertime replacement for the Bob Hope Show. It starred Van Heflin as Marlowe, a hard-boiled gumshoe whose antics had first been told in such Chandler stories as Farewell, My Lovely and The Lady in the Lake. The character also survived a leap to the screen and subsequently turned up on the Lux Radio Theater dramatization of Murder, My Sweet, starring Dick Powell. The show provided a nice summertime contrast to Hope, but then it was gone until September of 1948 when the new Adventures of Philip Marlowe came to CBS Saturdays in 1949 and 50. Gerald Moore starred as Marlowe in a fine show produced and directed by Norman Macdonald. Macdonald drew support from radio's finest, employing many of the actors who had worked with him on Escape. Despite the obvious quality, The Adventures of Philip Marlowe was sustained for most of its run, picking up a sponsorship by the Ford Motor Company as late as 1950. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear with The Adventures of Philip Marlowe and the Case of Red Wind from June of 1947. Another classic radio program from the audio vault of yesteryear.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, starring Van Heflin. Philip Marlowe, Hollywood's famous private detective created by Raymond Chandler. Philip Marlowe, tough, cynical private eye of Murder, My Sweet, the sardonic, case-hardened detective of The Brasher Doubloon, The Lady in the Lake, and The Big Sleep. You've seen him in action in all of those top-flight mystery pictures. Now, in order that you may continue to enjoy this exciting mystery series, Pepsodent brings you The Adventures of Philip Marlowe on the air with a cast of noted radio players and starring MGM's brilliant and dynamic young actor, Van Heflin.
There was a rough desert wind blowing into Los Angeles that evening. It was one of those hot, dry Santa Anas that come down through the mountain passes and curl your hair, make your nerves jump and your skin itch. On nights like that, every booze party ends up in a fight, and meek little housewives feel the edge of a carving knife and study their husbands' necks. Anything can happen when the Santa Ana blows in from the desert. I closed up my office early. I got tired of reading Philip Marlowe, private investigator, backwards on the ground glass of my office door. So I opened the door and closed it from the outside and locked it and went out to get a beer before I went up to my apartment.
Feller up again, Mr. Marlin?
Marlowe. Marlin is a fish.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, you bartender. Give me another ride.
Drunk again.
What'd you expect in this business? Autograph hounds?
Make it snappy, yeah?
Be right with you, sport. I gotta draw this man a beer. Crying out loud, these stumble bums have come in here.
You got another customer, Backus?
Hey, bud. You seen a lady in here lately?
A lady?
Tall, good-looking, brown hair, a print bolero jacket, and a blue silk dress.
No, sir.
No, sir.
Nobody like that's been in.
All right, straight scotch, fast. Left my engine running out there.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
This slick-looking, sarcastic guy stepped up to the bar and drank his scotch whole. He stopped. The drunk was grinning at him. And then, without changing his grin, the drunk swept a gun from somewhere so fast it was just a blur coming out. Made a cup of hard snaps and a little smoke curled. Very little.
All right, you other guys. Don't move. So long, Waldo. All right, don't move, you two. Poor Waldo. But I made his nose bleed. So long, boys. Drink up.
All right, get on that phone, kid. I'll get his license number.
Holy smoke.
Not too late. Away with this dead guy's car.
Maybe he ain't dead.
He's dead, all right.
Where's your phone? This is for the police. The prowl car boys were there in about 5 minutes. Waldo was out of business, all right. And nothing in his pockets told who he was, but he had about $700 on him. I told the cops what I knew, including about Waldo's tall, brown-haired, pretty girl in the bolero jacket. It was about 9 o'clock when I stepped out of the elevator in my apartment house and almost walked right into a tall, brown-haired, pretty girl in a bolero jacket, waiting for the elevator on my floor.
Oh, excuse me.
Just a minute, lady.
I said, excuse me, I'm in a hurry. Now, if you'll be good enough to
step out... Look, you better not go outside in those clothes.
Just what do you mean by telling me what?
This isn't a make. You're in trouble.
Trouble?
Yeah, the cops are looking for you in those clothes.
But I haven't done anything that...
I'm in room 41 across the hall now. I never collected an etching in my life.
All right, I'll go with you. I'll go.
I got to my room and rustled up some scotch and soda and brought the girl her glass. She had a small automatic in her hand. It jumped up at me. And her eyes were full of panic. I put down both glasses on the table slowly so that I wouldn't be misunderstood. Look, sister, maybe this wind has got you crazy, too.
Don't move. Careful, don't move.
A man just got shot in a bar down the street. Before he got it, he'd been asking about a tall, pretty girl with a bolero jacket, like yours.
What did he look like, this man?
Tall, 5'11", slim, dark brown eyes with a lot of glitter. Dark suit, white handkerchief in the breast pocket. And he must have seen you earlier tonight to know how you were dressed. Am I getting anywhere?
Used to be my chauffeur.
You had an appointment with him, didn't you?
Why?
Listen, he asked for you, didn't he?
Yes, I had an appointment with him. He'd stolen something from me when he left 3 days ago. I was going to buy it back from him.
Why didn't you tell the police?
I couldn't tell them.
It was valuable, wasn't it? Valuable enough for Waldo to steal?
$15,000.
Ah, it's peanuts.
It wasn't the value. It meant something to me. The man I love gave it to me, and now he's dead. He was a flyer shot down over Germany. I'll go back and tell my husband that. He probably hired you.
He did? How much is he paying me? And where is this husband of yours?
He's at a meeting.
This late at night?
He's a very important man. He's a hydroelectric engineer. I'll have you know that my husband
Skip it. I'll take him out to lunch sometime and have him tell me himself. And about Waldo. Whatever he had on you is dead stock now, like Waldo himself.
He's dead. Waldo's dead?
Yes, sister, he's dead. Dead, dead, dead. Lady, he is dead.
Oh.
All right, scream and I'll give you two black eyes.
I'm not going to scream. Who would that be?
There's a dressing room behind that door. Hide there. Now, don't argue with me, door.
All right, all right.
And I went to the door making a loud, yawning sound. The backs of my hands were wet. I opened the door. Without a gun, that was a mistake. I certainly knew the gun I was looking into, a .22 target automatic that had already killed one man that night. And I knew the bald head and the flat, shiny eyes and the face like a poisonous lizard. Baldy put the muzzle of his gun lightly against my throat. I backed into the room. And Baldy kicked the door shut.
You alone?
Look for yourself.
I'm asking, not looking.
I'm alone.
You and that dumb bartender saw me dust off Waldo.
What did Waldo do to you?
Who's asking?
Just making conversation.
He stooled on me on a bank job we did together. Got me 4 years in Michigan Penn. How is he?
Dead.
And still good. Drunk or sober. Tell me why I came here, pal.
You heard the barkeeper and me talking, and I told him my name, where I lived.
That's how, pal. I said, why?
Skip it. The hangman won't ask you to guess why he's there.
Well, you're pretty tough at that, ain't you? But you're slamming off, pal.
All right, but you could get that gun out of my neck and try somewhere else.
Oh, yeah, sure. Is that better? The switch all right?
Just so it isn't my neck.
Say when, pal. It's your party.
I leaned against the gun. The door of the dressing room showed a crack of darkness. The crack widened. I began to shake a little. The girl came quietly into the room, but there was white all around her iris. She was scared. She had her gun in her hand, but I was sorry for her. Dead sorry. She'd try to make the door scream. Either way, it'd be curtains for both of us.
You scared, mister? You worried about any little thing?
I couldn't talk. The girl floated in the air somewhere behind Baldy, and her horrified face was drifting toward us. My mouth was as cold and dry as yesterday's toast.
Well, kid, how's it feel? You ready yet? Go on, say the word.
Well, don't take all night about it if you're going to do something about it.
Why not, pal? I like this.
Well, suppose I yell.
Go ahead, yell. Go ahead.
Put up your hands!
Hey, look!
Oh.
Thanks, sister. Thanks. That buys me. Everything I have is yours now and forever.
Is he dead?
You flatter me no end, lady. I only punched him. All right, now get out of here while I call the cops down on this killer.
Yes. Good night. Good
hey,
night.
Wait. Leave that Bolero jacket here. It marks you for the cops.
Oh, yes. Here.
Okay. See you again?
Why?
Oh, I don't know. No, I guess not. After all, who am I to be the rival of a dead flyer? I'll see that the police get Jesse James here. Good night, lady. Yeah? You mean me?
Yes. Please.
Oh, you. Again, huh?
Sit in. I must talk to you.
You want to know what happened at headquarters, huh?
Yes.
Well, I went down there with the law and gave them the story. Left you out of it.
Oh, thank you.
You saved my life, so no one knows a thing about you. Well, incidentally, neither do I.
Well, my name is Mrs. Frank Bossily. 212 Fremont Place, Olympia 24596. Is that what you want?
I guess so.
Well, there it is.
And why did you really come back?
I wanted my pearls.
Pearls?
Yes.
Pearls, too. All right. Tell me about the pearls. We've had a murder and a beautiful mystery woman and a sadistic killer and a heroic rescue. Now we will have pearls.
I was to buy them back from the man called Waldo.
Well, I saw everything that came out of his pockets, and there weren't any pearls.
Could they be hidden in his apartment?
It's possible.
Waldo lived on the same floor you do in this apartment house.
And why didn't I know him, at least by sight?
He moved in last week. He managed to get a sublet.
Great, a sort of an amateur magician on the side, huh?
It's getting rather late.
Yeah. What about your husband this hot, mysterious night?
He's still at his meeting.
You could have brought him along. You could have sat in the back seat working out a problem in hydroelectrics while...
While what?
Well, I didn't have any answers. They wouldn't sound cheap or just ridiculous. They're from the sophomore class in repartee. Had an unlit cigarette in my hand. I threw it out of the window. I took a hold of her and kissed her. She sat very still. I was shaking when I let go of her. Her voice trembled a little when she spoke.
A man should do that. That wasn't always that way. Only since Johnny Dalmas was killed in the war. He gave me those pearls. 41 of them, perfectly matched with a diamond propeller clasp. I'd have loved them if they'd been wooden beads because he gave them to me. I love Johnny. The way you love just one time. You understand that?
What's your name?
Lola.
Lola, how did you explain a $15,000 pearl necklace to your husband?
I told him they were imitation, then I bought them myself.
How did Waldo latch onto them, what they stood for?
When my husband was in Argentina, Waldo and I go for long drives. I was restless and wretched because of Johnny. Sometimes Waldo and I had a little drink together, but that's all.
But you confided in Waldo about this pearl.
I was a fool.
And when your husband came back, Waldo stole the pearls and offered to sell them back to you, or he'd tell Papa.
I was a fool.
And now you think the pearls are upstairs in Waldo's apartment?
I suppose it's a lot to ask.
No, sweetheart. I've been paid. I'll go look. Wait here, huh? Is the gun along, Lola?
No. Well?
No.
No pearls?
No pearls.
Oh.
There was a man in Waldo's room.
Man? Who?
You know a man named Leon Balsanos?
Not by name. I don't know.
Mexican, South American, about 45, small, iron gray hair, very neat, fawn-colored suit, wine-colored tie.
No, I don't think I know such a man. Is he the one in Waldo's room?
Yeah.
What does he have to say?
Very little. In fact, nothing. He's dead.
You are listening to The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, starring Van Heflin, with music composed and conducted by Lynn Murray.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
We continue with The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, created by Raymond Chandler and starring Van Heflin, who appears by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of the Technicolor musical Fiesta, starring Esther Williams.
I sat with Lola Barsley in her car listening to that jittery, infuriating desert wind gallop around in the midnight streets. I just told her about the Latin-looking man I'd found in Waldo's room in a very dead condition. I held her hands until they stopped trembling. Then I gave her the few remaining details. He had a gun in a shoulder holster, but someone had strangled him before he could use it.
Someone? Waldo?
Maybe. You see that convertible coupe two cars ahead of us?
It's been there for hours. It was there before I parked it to wait for you.
Leon, the man in Waldo's room, came in that car, but according to the key containers he carried, that isn't his car.
Whose car is it? Does it matter?
Well, it belongs to a lady, according to the tag on the keys.
A lady?
Well, Anyway, a woman, if you can split hairs. Eugenie Kolchenko. Hmm? In West Los Angeles?
Never heard of her.
Huh. All right, well, you go home now.
What are you going to do?
Drive that flossy convertible around, wave at my friends, impress people. You run along now. Me, I've got another date.
Yes? What is it, please?
Miss Eugenie Kolchenko?
Yes? What is it?
Did you lose or misplace a pigeon gray convertible coupe?
What are you saying?
Now, don't be alarmed. I found it and I brought it home to you.
Come in, please. It is a reward you wish. Shall we say...
Snap out of it, Dragon Lady. Who was he?
Who was who?
The little guy, Leon. You loaned your cart to. He's dead. Who was he?
Oh, no, no.
Oh, yes, yes.
Eugenie.
Darling, darling, come here, please.
What's the matter, honey? Who is this man?
I came about Miss Kolchenko's car.
What about her car?
The gentleman who borrowed it couldn't return it on account of he isn't alive.
She's dead. Darling, he's dead.
Well, that's putting it more bluntly, of course.
Dead, huh?
Mm, completely.
Who are you?
Philip Marlowe, private investigator. My card.
Mm-hmm. You told the police yet?
Never do at once what can be deferred pending negotiations. Aesop.
I might negotiate.
Oh, peachy.
What do you know, Marlowe?
A man named Waldo was shot in a bar tonight. I happened to have the inside as to who he was, and when I visited his apartment tonight, I found this Leo Balsanos dead.
He wouldn't have had $500 in 20s on him, would he?
No, but this Waldo had over $700 on him when he was killed at that cocktail bar, mostly in 20s.
Mm.
Is there a basis there for negotiations yet?
Very well, Marlowe. I'm a married man. There were certain unpaid bills for some stuff Miss Kolchenko here had charged to my account.
But you told me I might charge to your account.
All right, so I wasn't very bright.
That might be the understatement of the decade, but go on.
I had the unpaid bill safely in my briefcase. Somehow this Waldo had a chance to steal the briefcase. I hired Leon and gave him $500 to buy back those bills from Waldo.
Instead, Waldo took Leon's dough and was forced to kill Leon in the process. Then he went out to keep another date and accidentally walked into an old pal hostile enough to blow him down.
And someone still has those bills. And I'm in for a divorce suit.
The man who shot Waldo got away in Waldo's car. With your briefcase in it. Yeah, it could be. The cops caught him.
Oh. And the police have the briefcase.
Maybe. But the police are interested in solving crime, not in tossing mud for the benefit of sensation eaters. Look, I've got a friend or two at headquarters. Let me see what I can do.
It's worth $500 to me.
Well, then that's what it'll cost you.
Well, good luck. And, thank you, Mr.,
Marlowe. Philip Marlowe, remember?
My name is Frank Barsley.
Bars. Barsley. Oh?
What does that mean?
The big hydroelectric engineer?
Yeah. How did you know?
My voices tell me.
Who?
Darling, this man is manifestly insane.
It's the heat, Miss Kolchenko. It's the Santa Ana. It's the desert wind. May I use your telephone? Someday I must tell you about Ibarra. Salt of the earth, Ibarra, detective lieutenant over at Central Homicide. I phoned Ibarra from Miss Kolchenko's house and told him where he could find a well-dressed cadaver named Leon and furnished a few small details. I gave Ibarra time to check my tip and then I went down to see the good lieutenant and told him why I'd been up in Waldo's room, only to find Leon instead of a certain lady's string of pearls.
Pearls, eh?
Well, I thought Waldo might have them up there.
Whose pearls were they?
A lady's.
Go on.
Or they might have been in Waldo's car that Waldo's killer drove away in.
Yeah.
What, yeah?
They might have.
Also a batch of unpaid bills charged to the account of a certain Frank Barsley?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, now, the police aren't interested in domestic scandal. They want to prevent or to solve crime, right?
So?
So, I've got $500 for the police fund if those pearls and those bills are returned to their rightful owners.
Quit your kidding.
No, it's a valuable necklace.
Yeah? Here's your necklace.
That's it. 41 pearls, perfectly matched diamond propeller clasp. That's it. That's the one.
Take it away, Morrow.
On the level?
Mm-hmm. Just tell me straight what it's all about, all I ask.
Sure. Well, this Waldo was blackmailing a wife with the pearls and her husband with the bills. A guy by the name of Barsley. Well, Barsley sent Leon to get the bills from Waldo. Instead, Waldo killed Leon, then stepped out and happened to get shot by that guy at the bar. Now, if Barsley's name stays out of the paper, I get $500, and that goes to the police fund.
We'll keep him out.
Well, now, I'm not in this case for money. I just want to get back the bills and the pearls.
As you say, Morrow, the police aren't in business to sling mud.
Well, you can deliver the pearls to the lady yourself if you like.
No, Morrow. You better take them to her. You see, except for the diamond propeller clasp on them, they're phony.
Phony, but...
All but the clasp, Morrow. All but the clasp.
Well, I stared at Ibarra. So the flyer, Johnny Dalmas, the great lover, had given Lola a string of fake pearls. Well, I didn't know how to tell her, but I called her up and told her to meet me at the Beachcombers at 2. I was going to slip her the bad news slowly.
I'm glad you asked me to meet you here, Mr. Marlowe. See, I had to have someone to talk to.
Go ahead. Go ahead, talk. I'm listening.
Now, Mr. Marlowe, now more than ever, I must have those pearls.
Why? Money trouble?
Oh, no. It's just that everything's gone wrong. And this morning, my husband told me we're to separate.
Oh, I'm sorry, Lola.
But if I had Johnny's pearls, it would be a link with the past and with Johnny. And all he meant to me. It's how a woman feels, Mr. Marlowe. I wouldn't blame you for not understanding.
Maybe I do, though.
So please, Mr. Marlowe, please. You'll try to find my pearls.
Lola, look,
Even if it isn't all of them. Any part of them. Any single, smallest one of them. It'll be Johnny's.
Look, will you meet me here again around 4 o'clock?
I'll be here.
Okay, I'll see what I can do. There was only one earthly decent thing I could do. I took Lola's glass pearls to a jeweler and I had him take off the diamond clasp and put it on one of those strings of so-called simulated pearls that they sell you for $3, tax included. And I went back to keep my 4 o'clock date with Lola at the Beachcombers.
Well, Mr. Marlowe, anything new?
Yes, the police found some pearls in Waldo's car.
They found my pearls?
No, not exactly.
Not exactly?
Well, Waldo was getting set to jip you, Lola. He had the diamond clasp of your necklace attached to a string of cheap imitations. And then he sold the real pearls. These are the imitations here.
Yes. But it is my clasp. The clasp is real.
Is that all right?
Yes, it's the clasp that Johnny Dalmas gave me. Of course it's all right.
That's well.
Thank you so much, Mr. Marlowe.
Forget it.
I won't. Not ever. But is this goodbye?
Yeah, I think so. You'll never get over Johnny Dalmas, Lola. If anybody ever bothers you again, though, well, let me know. Name's Philip Marlowe. I drove almost to Malibu and then I parked and walked out on a rock cliff jutting into the Pacific Ocean. Then I reached in my pocket and dug out the string of Bohemian glass pearls that Lieutenant Ibarra found in Waldo's car. I cut the knot at one end and slipped the pearls off one by one. One by one, I flipped them into the water. The gull swooped down on them and then flapped up again, screaming indignantly. The phony pearls had fooled Waldo and Lola Barsley, but they couldn't fool a seagull. I said to myself, to the memory of Johnny Dalmas, just another four-flusher. I listened a while to the wheeling seagulls. All at once, I realized that the wind had died. The Santa Ana had blown itself out. The red wind was done. It was over. Thank you.
have just heard Van Heflin starring in the first of a new mystery series, Raymond Chandler's The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Tonight's story on The Adventure of Philip Marlowe is based on Red Wind, written by Raymond Chandler, creator of Philip Marlowe, the screen's most famous private detective. It was adapted for radio by Milton Geiger. Heard with Van Heflin was Loreen Tuttle as Lola Barsley. And this is Wendell Niles inviting you to listen again next week at this same time to another exciting story on The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, starring Van Heflin with a distinguished cast.
From June 17th of 1947, it's been The Adventures of Philip Marlowe with the case of Red Wind, starring Van Heflin. Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Yesteryear, but join us again next week and invite a friend to listen. Together, enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. The comedy, mystery, the fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, I miss you, sodio, vodio, dodio, do.
Preceding program, copyright Edgewater Productions. All rights reserved.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio, KSSR-DB San Francisco, where the big bands swing.